Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Way early this morning, Brad Higdon shared a major spoiler alert from everyone's favorite hit show, sad emojis to express his feelings about the plot twist, and a playlist he made to drown out his sorrows? Dude, oversharing alert. Brad, Geico has something worth sharing with those who haven't befriended you, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance at geico.com. So stop moping about the post-apocalyptic world and start saving in the real world. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Blog Talk Radio.
Wins. Shutouts.
Shootouts.
Forehand.
Five hole.
It's time for your recap of Pittsburgh Penguins hockey.
The most important interviews, best information, hottest news, and no topic is off limits.
Radio PI. Now on the Radio PI Podcast Network.
It is a whole new world, and I don't just mean the first official day of summer. This nice weather we've been having hopefully means the end of rain as spring showers go away and the summer flowers hopefully continue. We're looking at a balmy day here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we're doing it in the first official day of the summer here on June 20th, 2016. And as we also speak, this is another Radio Gold edition here, Radio PI Podcast Network and the Penns Initiative Airwaves, also the Pittsburgh Sports Initiative Airwaves. The dust has now settled in the Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup win. There's been a parade. There's been the fanfare. We actually now are even a period of life, because a whole new world doesn't just mean the first official day of summer. It is a whole new world in the sports world well beyond Pittsburgh. Not only did the Penguins win the Stanley Cup, but the region has something to celebrate in terms of the geographic region, maybe not the fans, as we're coming off of a day. We're on the heels of a day. First official day of summer is the day after Dustin Johnson wins the U.S. Open in Pittsburgh at Oakmont Country Club. It'll be back in 2025, so get excited for that. The Cleveland Cavaliers win their first ever NBA championship, which is the first professional sports championship, a major pro sports championship since 1964 in the city of Cleveland. LeBron James delivers on his promise to Cleveland in Northeast Ohio. So within, what, 100 so miles, we get two parades, or the area gets two parades in a month. And then also, for any wrestling fans out there, and I know the man who will join me can appreciate this, Dean Ambrose wins the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. So in a period of, 6 hours, not even a full day, but about 6 hours, Dustin Johnson breaks his curse, gets his first major win. LeBron delivers for Cleveland. They break their curse, win the first pro championship for the city of Cleveland for the Cavs since 1964 and Jim Brown and the Browns. And then Dean Ambrose caps it all off 20 minutes after the Cavs throw up the basketball in celebration, getting to take the streets to Cleveland. Dean Ambrose finally cashes in his money in the bank and wins it in the WWE for the World Heavyweight Championship. All of that, though, doesn't matter for right now. Our purposes is to bring you more Radio Gold. Our purposes are to maybe take an off-season vacation, but before we do, cap off our campaign of Radio Gold here on the year, on the Radio PI Podcast Network, on the Penns Initiative Airways, and the Pittsburgh Sports Initiative Airways. To do that, who better than the master of the Ayatollah Bath Nine himself? I never give myself an introduction like that, but I'm going to do it here. This might be the last year for me for a while, at least on these airwaves. I am Mike Osti, and to do this, there is nobody better than the heel of all heels, the Pittsburgh media extraordinaire. You know him from Trip Total Media. You know him from WPXI. You know him from Rossi Radio on CBS's 93.7 The Fan. He's been on these airwaves before. I know him as a friend in media here in our region in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You know him as the Rob Rossi. Rob, welcome back to the show. I love speaking heel to heel, even though you're a much stronger heel than myself. So before we get to anything, How's it going, man? It's been a while since I talked to you. We conversed via text and on Twitter, but it's been a while since we really talked. First official day of summer. There's not much to be mad about right now, I guess.
No. It's gorgeous in Pittsburgh. It's going well. Thanks for the intro. I said I should just hang up after that. That was so good. No, it's going really well. Like I always say, the job of the heel is to put the face over, and I was happy to do that a week ago Sunday. So I can tell you this, as a guy who doesn't watch a lot of sports but had a rooting interest more because I have family in Cleveland, I was watching that game last night, and it's so much easier to be working, covering a game than it is to watch it as a fan. I don't think fans get a perspective of that because at least if you're working, you're in control of something. You're in control of the story you're writing or the audio you're trying to get. I mean, when you're just sitting there watching it, it's not something I do a lot. It was very uncomfortable for me on that Sunday night watching the Cleveland game. But I think it's really cool that within a week of each other, within miles of one another, and where they did it, Sidney Crosby and LeBron James, who I consider to be the two iconic figures of their generations in their respective leagues, I think get legacy, and I don't like to use that word a lot, you know, I don't. I think they had legacy-making victories within a week of one another, a week from one another, actually. And I thought that was I think that's pretty cool that we'll look back at 2016, the month of June, as probably the month that Sidney and LeBron cemented themselves as what they will be remembered for doing. Crosby, Mario Lemieux himself said it, needed. He said Malkin and Crosby, he thought it was important. They got that second championship, and Crosby getting the Conn Smythe, I think, cements his status. I mean, he's won everything now. And you know, what LeBron James did, winning a title in that town and the way he did it. It's pretty special stuff to watch. It's pretty thrilling stuff to watch in a sports region to see. And I think Pittsburghers can maybe – I know Pittsburghers tend to hate Cleveland, but if you think about it, since the last Cleveland title before this Cavaliers won, our city's won, what, 11?
11.
Something crazy like, yeah. So, I mean, it's we've had a lot of great moments. You shouldn't begrudge Cleveland one, especially when there's a good chance the city will break out into chaos in a couple of weeks with the Republican convention. So.
I think it's hard pressed for anybody to disagree with you. As much as I myself too, like many other Pittsburghers, I've been a career Cleveland curse appreciator and Cleveland hater, but it's not a sport that Pittsburgh plays right now. It's been so long, and I saw the list that somebody in media tweeted out there right as Cleveland was about to win. L.A.'s won so many. Pittsburgh's won the 11 you talked about. Detroit's won 9. New York, I think, has won 20 with all those Yankee titles and some others. L.A. has won so many. And Cleveland, nothing since 1964. And they've had so many chances that LeBron James articulated with the fumble, the drive, Jose Mesa. LeBron James, a historian. He knew everything. And it is legacy defining for him, certainly, to finally deliver on that promise, go back to Cleveland, do it there, because one championship in Cleveland is just as good as many other places and probably more important for his legacy, the one there, than the two in Miami. But like him, Crosby had to do it now. It was important for him to get another one. I would agree with you. I think it's very legacy defining for both of them, who are the two best of an era, but now that conversation doesn't have to be really had because they got the job done once again. And then we have Dustin Johnson going to two here in U.S. Open in Oakmont.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I feel bad for that guy because, like, his moment lasted about 3 hours.
That's about it.
You know, and you had two – I mean, I don't know if this has happened before. I'm sure it has. Certainly not often. You had two teams win championships in a season when they replaced their coach, which doesn't happen often. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does in Pittsburgh. But I hope Penguin fans. I sense that Penguin fans enjoyed this, and I think it's different. I mean, Cleveland fans have been waiting 50 years, and look, the city of Cleveland has not rebounded as well from industry betraying it as Pittsburgh has. Pittsburgh as a city has rebuilt itself, and we're all fortunate to live in a a region that really isn't a, you know, an industrial town anymore as much as a town that's, you know, basically generating a lot of its growth on the newer technologies and the medical field. And I mean,
and LeBron James hurt them
as a city.
When LeBron left, he hurt the, not only just leaving the sports team, but he hurt the economy. He almost killed the city.
Yeah. I mean, and it was, well, Cleveland's had a hard time. So Pittsburgh has had it better in sports and in life. Excuse me, my voice is still coming back to me from you know, I just think when you talk about it, bringing it back to sports, I mean, and bring it back to hockey, I think what, and I wrote this in my trip column the day that after they won the cup, the column that appeared the day they won the cup, you know, Sidney and Evgeny have had so many great individual moments, but for them to really become the leaders on a team, and I'll throw Chris Letang into this too. For them to become the leaders in on a team that won the way it did. I mean, I voted for the Conn Smythe, and I had a really hard time. I gave it a lot of thought. My ballot changed a little bit from Game 5 to Game 6. For Sidney and Evgeny to make the type of contribution that they did and to play the way they did, I mean, I think Sidney will get a lot of attention and credit and deserves it for how he performed without being a dominant scorer, although he scored a lot. I think Evgeny maybe doesn't get enough attention for being willing to sacrifice his own personal, you know, success. I mean, he played with the worst wingers on the team, arguably. Certainly Chris Kunitz played extraordinary. But going in, I mean, you would have said Rust and Kunitz were your two least certain wingers to do things offensively. And I thought the series really turned in many ways for the Penguins. I mean, I thought it was a series they dominated and probably should have swept. Matt Murray candidly played himself off my Conn Smythe ballot during the series. But I thought the performance of Evgeny Malkin from game 4 through 6, had it been a Stanley Cup final MVP as opposed to a Stanley Cup playoff MVP, Evgeny might have walked away with his second one. He was that dominant on the puck. And I think both Crosby and Malkin now, Crosby goes into the top 10 all time, and Malkin becomes, I thought he was anyway, but you know, he's going to go down as one of the most accomplished European players ever. And that's saying something.
That is saying something. And we've been doing so much legacy here. Rob Rossi with me on the Pens and Sheer Airways and the Radio PI Podcast Network, as we're talking some Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup aftermath, and then maybe go into what wealth we're expecting in the Pittsburgh sports world before we go into our radio offseason. But we're talking so much legacy and Crosby and Malkin and this Penguin Cup being so important to do this now, give them a second one, give a guy like Kessel his first, and do it now to gather back the fan base in a new era of Penguin hockey and stamp down another championship for Pittsburgh. But now, kind of give me your thoughts on somebody who's been around the Pittsburgh sports scene a while, has watched games, has covered games, has done so much in the area, in terms of Crosby and Malkin's legacy now. Two Stanley Cups, but in three Cup finals, they did lose the 1 year to Detroit. Crosby now gets the Conn Smythe. Malkin already has one. We know the individual accolades. Compare those legacies to what Lemieux and Jágr in particular as a duo did in the early 90s. Not saying better, worse, but give me where Crosby and Malkin could rank and the proper perspective for those legacies in this era in comparison to how great it was in the Lemieux-Jágr time.
Well, I'll say this. I said this. To me, my Mount Washington of Pittsburgh sports, of Western Pennsylvania sports, is Mario Lemieux, Joe Green, Tony Dorsett, and Susie McConnell Cereal. I think they are the four athletes who would have their names their images carved. I mean, Mario is the greatest individual player the city's ever known. Joe Green was the catalyst for the team that really put the city on the map, and then the team that has had the most sustained success. Susie McConnell Cereo is a legend in her sport on many levels, and one of the great athletes, one of the great amateur athletes ever. And, you know, Tony Dorsett is one of the greatest high school players ever. He's the greatest Pitt Panther ever, and probably the greatest one of the top five college football players ever. And he also had a Hall of Fame NFL career. So to me, those – but I will say this. Now, I think Crosby and Malkin go down as the greatest tandem in Pittsburgh sports history.
Okay.
Because they – and in Penguins history, because they've had to do this together. Jágr came in, 7 years into Mario's career. A lot of Jágr's individual brilliance came after Mario's prime, and they were separated by enough time where they were teammates, but I wouldn't call them a team. They were a great pair, and I think they should forever be remembered as the two greatest Penguins in terms of what they did individually. I mean, as magnificent as Sidney and Evgeny have been, neither of them can hold a candle to Jaromir Jágr in terms of just being. I mean, Jaromir Jágr is one of them going to go down as one of the top however many scorers of all time.
He
won 5 scoring titles in Pittsburgh. So that's not to knock Crosby and Malkin. But there is something I think very fitting that the only time a player's won the Conn Smythe has been with Lemieux, Crosby, and Malkin. I think, you know, to have those three centers, and they're three franchise centers. And, you know, the fact that Gino would be the number three center on that list, well, hey, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch in front of you. And let's be honest, what are you thinking if you're Ron Francis? Because now you're a fourth-line center all time. And Brian Trottier can't even crack the list. You know, what Sid and Gino have done, I think, you know, they won. We got to look at their whole career, right? They had to resurrect a franchise. They had to learn they had to teach a franchise how to win while learning how to win themselves. They went to a final long before anybody thought they would. They won it the next year, knocking off arguably the best team of this salary cap era in those 2009 Detroit Red Wings. And then they had the league change on them. They had the hockey gods conspire against them in terms of injuries. And quite frankly, they had the franchise kind of lose its mind there for a couple of years and get away from its identity. And yet 7 years later, they were able to prevail. And the fact that they were able to prevail in a different way, the fact that they were able to carry the Penguins in 2009. It's like I talked to Marc-Andre Fleury about this, and he said it's almost like people forget how great they were in 2009. And then that they didn't have to, but they still were needed in those moments. And I just asked Penguin fans this question. And they have all summer to consider the answer. They can let me know next year. After Game 5 of the Tampa series, when I thought Crosby, Malkin, and Chris Letang each – sort of let their team down by letting not only performing poorly and not backing up Marc-Andre Fleury, who's a good friend of theirs in his moment of, I guess if you want to call that opportunity, but also not speaking to the media afterwards and really putting it on those players and, you know, the lesser guys to answer for that. I thought after that, I've never seen the three of them better. From game 6 of the Tampa series through game 6 of the Stanley Cup final, I've never seen Crosby, Malkin, and Fleury better together. I've never seen them be more responsible as hockey players. I've never seen them lead the way they have. I've never seen them look so dominant on the puck. I thought this was in many ways for Crosby and Malkin a crowning achievement compared to even 2009. And for Chris Letang, I think it puts him in a category that he wasn't before this postseason, and I think that is one of the elite defenseman of his generation. And it's ludicrous to think that there could be a team built on any hockey planet, let alone in one hockey country, that doesn't have him as one of their 6 top defensemen. I think he was the most indispensable player for the team. And I think Chris, he was number one on my Conn Smythe ballot. And I think he was the most valuable player to the Penguins during the playoffs. Nobody was asked to do more.
I was going to ask you that, actually. That's where I was going to go, is your Conn Smythe ballot. You mentioned that Crosby won, but you just said that you would have went Chris Letang, who was in the conversation.
My ballot was Chris Letang, 1,
yeah.
Phil Kessel, 2, Sidney Crosby, 3. After game 5, it was Letang, Kessel, Murray, but I decided Sid was going to be in that. Sid deserved to be in that mix. To be honest, I thought Letang and Kessel had separated themselves Everybody else was sort of playing for third. Had it gone to a game seven, Martin Jones might have knocked Crosby off just
maybe,
because he had had such a sensational final. And at that point, you're voting for MVP of the playoffs, and the Sharks had a chance to win the Stanley Cup at that point. But being that the Sharks didn't have a chance to win the Stanley Cup, you know, I felt comfortable with that ballot. I thought it was a really hard decision. You know, speaking with many of the 18 voters afterwards, we all thought it was a tough vote, and that you really there were a handful of guys you could have picked and not really made a wrong decision. And I put Nick Bonino in that too. I mean, I really wrestled with putting Nick Bonino on that ballot because I thought in many ways he was the engine of that HBK line. It was a true team. Those Penguins became a true team. It was a team I never saw establishing that type of identity after they had gone so long without an identity. And certainly they shocked the hell out of me, but that's the beauty of sports. You can be surprised. And I thought this was the type of team that had the type of back end that couldn't possibly hold up in a playoff series. And they proved me wrong in the most unexpected of ways, the Penguins did. They made sure their back end never had to hold up, because they just played Chris Letang 30 minutes a night, and they kept the puck away from the other team so extraordinarily that if there were defending issues, zone-to-zone defending issues, we didn't see them a whole lot because the Penguins are so good on the puck. And, I mean, as I like to say, man, they had a six-game sweep of the Sharks, because the Sharks really didn't win any of those games. The Penguins handed them.
No, you could argue a gentleman's sweep even though it was six games over the Sharks. Do you buy in at all? Because the camp, there were some that went Letang, but the camp seemingly got split, Kessel and Crosby, to a lot of people. Do you buy in at all that Kessel got screwed by the Canadian media?
I don't think so. I know the guys that voted. I have great respect for the committee. I was blessed to be on it. You know, I without giving things away, I mean, you know my ballot, obviously. I know that, you know, I voted more as like a national person. The three Pittsburgh voters were Jonathan Mboli, Dave Molinari, and Josh Yoey, all very trusted, very respected hockey scribes.
Right.
But between the four of us who were with Pittsburgh, I mean, I wasn't technically with Pittsburgh, but the four of us who are from Pittsburgh that voted on this, I think there were three different guys with first place votes.
Okay.
Three guys who had different first place votes. So, I mean, it's like, it's really hard. I mean, it was a really hard decision.
It was a hard decision.
I don't think Kessel was robbed. I think if there was anything, I think there might have been people who bought into the Crosby narrative, but the Conn Smythe is often about narrative. And Sidney Crosby was a deserving Conn Smythe winner. I mean, he ended up with quite a few game-winning goals, and I thought play throughout was stellar. The only series I thought where he wasn't really good was the Washington series, and even in that you can argue that he did a lot of the hard work. You know, it's funny. I think in many ways it played out like the Penguins' formula often has played out in the past. And it's just a different four. I mean, I thought that in round one, that series turned when Evgeny Malkin found his game after missing the month with the elbow ligament damage. And I thought after Evgeny Malkin had gotten inserted to that lineup, the Penguins were an unstoppable force for the Rangers. In round two, I really do think Matt Murray won it. I mean, Matt Murray won it early. He got the Penguins to that 3-1 lead by playing brilliant goal. I think that was the zenith of his postseason, but he won that round. Round three, I would give to Crosby, and I thought he was sensational against the Lightning. And round four was, to me, you know, Chris Letang scored one winner and set up the other three. And I thought he was a dominant presence at every end of the ice and doing it without doing it with a whole host of defense partners until they settled on Brian Dumoulin, and doing it without the luxury of Trevor Daley in the lineup. I thought that was Chris Letang's series, much like it was Jordan Staal's series in a way in 2009. So in many ways, the Penguins had four guys stamp a series. And, you know, that is the formula. And they're lucky enough to have types of players who can do that. Pittsburgh's very fortunate to have had Crosby, Malkin, Letang, and Fleury.
Absolutely.
I think it's sad that Mark's probably going to end the way it is, because the Penguins would not have won the Stanley Cup this year without Marc-Andre Fleury. and that's indisputable. He kept the season from completely capsizing. He kept that ship from completely turning over on itself when it looked like everything but Marc-Andre Fleury and Evgeny Malkin were a disaster through 2.5 months. And Marc-Andre Fleury was even better than Malkin during that stretch. And I have no doubt that if Fleury had been healthy going into the playoffs, the Penguins would have had the same result. That doesn't mean I'm not impressed by what Matt Murray did. It's just I think the Penguins played the type of team game and were as good as they were puck possession and defensively. I think Fleury would have won that. And to be honest, I think they might have won the last two series easier than they had if Fleury had been the Fleury that he was before the second concussion. People forget how well he had played down the stretch.
Well, you know how it is, Rob. People, a lot of fans, and namely Pittsburgh fans and some users out there, they like to live in the present and forget the past, and their memories are very, very short. So I don't disagree with you at all in any of those assessments. And we'll get to Marc-Andre Fleury here in a couple minutes. But would you agree with a summary of the Conn Smythe vote just quickly? Would you agree if I gave a summary of the Conn Smythe vote that there were – many deserving candidates, as you said, this was more even of a team win than one guy leading the way by himself. It wasn't a clear-cut vote, and similar to how when a team wins a Super Bowl in football, if the quarterback plays well enough, they're usually going to give it to him. When it was almost when in doubt, a couple guys could have won it, so we're as a tiebreaker, we're going to go Crosby because he's the captain, he's the best player in the world, he's the legacy. We'll give it to him to give him that one last award he hasn't won.
Yeah,
almost if there's a tiebreaker, we go Crosby.
I think that's the outside perspective. I can tell you as a guy who's voted on this thing three times, there isn't a lot of talking about it amongst the voters going in. Like
all
I
right.
said, it's an 18-panel group. I think it was – I want to say it was maybe 12 when I voted in 09. So they've added six. They've added more national guys, which I think is good because they see more of the postseason. I think it played out this year where Crosby won a slim victory over – I think it might have been a vote or two over Kessel or a point or two, however they pointed out. I think that's fair to look at it that way, but I don't think people thought of it that way. I think people wrestled – I think the people that didn't vote Kessel over Crosby wrestled with the concept of Kessel had those opportunities that he admittedly took advantage of because Crosby was playing against the top line. And that Crosby wasn't exactly a slouch either. I'm guessing, that I put Kessel above Sid because I thought Kessel had the most consistent postseason of the Penguins. And I mean,
that's me too.
Phil Kessel had had those numbers, if anybody had had those numbers on a Stanley Cup winning team, usually they're the Conn Smythe unless the goalie is outstanding. To me, I always come down to this question. This is how I voted. I can't speak to anybody else. I asked myself a question the night before Game 5. If I were to remove one of the players that I had in my group, and my group were Kessel, Sidney Crosby, Chris Letang, Matt Murray, and Nick Bonino. That was my five, right, that I was trying to put three into a – pick three from that five, right? If I was going to take one of those guys away from the team for a series, which guy do I take away and the Penguins don't win the series in my mind? And it came down to Chris Letang. Because I think they asked him to do so much more than they asked everybody else to do because the defense corps didn't have what the forwards had, which was extraordinary depth. The inexperience up front was able to be overcome by the fact that on every one of those lines, they had guys who had experience. Whereas you didn't have that. And Olli Maatta, gets a concussion in the – he comes into the series of the lower body, into the postseason of the lower body injury, gets a concussion, had some bad games. It didn't look to me like he was right until really the final. You look at Brian Dumoulin, who knew what to expect. It was his first full NHL season. He was a revelation. Trevor Daley was getting the snot kicked out of him. Every time he touched a puck, he got hit. Ben Lovejoy was really, really good. I mean, he made himself a lot of money in this postseason. But, you're talking about Ben Lovejoy, a third-pairing defenseman, and, this is a defense corps that was basically alternating guys like Justin Schultz and, at times when they were missing people. And, Schultz is a good offensive-minded defenseman, but, he can be useless in his own zone sometimes. In fact, I'm not even sure the Penguins are going to really try to bring him back. Chris Letang, to me, was the anchor of that defense core, and, you know, he had to play penalty kill and power play and even strength. And there were times where every time I looked down from the press box, I saw him on the ice. I just I know they won a game when he was suspended, and, I'm, you know, somebody said to me, well, the guys in that group, Chris Letang had more bad games than anybody in that group. I said, yeah, but he was also – he also had more to do in every game than anybody in that group. So I was surprised he didn't get more love. Maybe because the Kessel and Crosby narratives were so overwhelming.
When you look at the history of the Pittsburgh Penguin franchise, now the fourth Stanley Cup has been won by the 2016 Pittsburgh Penguins. You look at 91, where they're breaking through. There was dark years. They draft Lemieux. He had individual success, but then they break through and do it. 92, they repeat, some say, the best team ever. They maybe should have went again the next year, 93, but they do not. 2009, retribution for 2008 after losing in the final. And then this year, a roller coaster ride of drama, but they do it, and it's an important cup for when they do it and for players' legacies here in 2016. Out of those four cups, and leaving 93 alone, because some like to go there, but the four championship years, which one of those would you say was the most surprising, either being the first one, getting revenge for 08, or even now? And which one of those would you say was the very best team in Pittsburgh Penguin history?
I would say this is the most surprising because it was so – I think it's easy to look back at where they were and not see it for what it was, which was teetering to the brink of disaster. They were fourth in the wild card standings.
When people Mike don't Feldman realize. Took over.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't think that's significant, then you don't really pay attention to how hard it is to make up ground in this sport. And when you think about even, I mean, you got to think about this too, because it's easy to forget this in the moment. They were so dominant in the playoffs at times that it's easy to forget that at the point that Evgeny Malkin goes down in Columbus, they had started to perform better, but they were only winning every other game. They were winning, losing, winning, losing, winning, losing. It didn't look like it was going to click. And then something happens that they were able to put together that HBK line, and Crosby was playing well, Letang was playing well. Somehow Malkin's injury, which is – guys, I can tell you, I mean, the fact that he played in this postseason wasn't – there were people that doubted that was going to be possible the night he got injured because they knew that the damage in those ligaments was significant. I mean, he may miss significant time next season because of that. But the fact that he was able to get back in and contribute – but think about this. They, as hot as they were going into the playoffs, they opened this postseason against – a team that had had their number in the Rangers when it counted, and without Malkin and Fleury, two of their four best players. And the team that opened the playoffs that way ended up winning the Stanley Cup, and they never got a win from their franchise goalie. Their arguably their second-best player in the franchise, Malkin, had some moments, but really until the final hadn't been dominant. Wasn't like Crosby elevated the team. They were getting – I mean, at one point, they were getting a string of winning goals from guys like Brian Rust and Connor Sheary, who were guys that began the season in the AHL. To me, this is the most surprising victory the Penguins have ever had. It might be the most surprising victory a Pittsburgh team's had since 1960s Pirates won the World Series because you couldn't have predicted this. Anybody that said they predicted this when Mike Sullivan was hired, they're a liar. I mean, maybe nobody predicted the doom that I predicted even a month out, but it was much closer to me being right about everything. I give Jim Rutherford a ton of credit. He changed the way he was running the franchise for the better. And I think he started, based off my understanding, I think he started listening to Jason Bottrell a lot more. And I think Jason has his fingerprints all over this team. And I think Mike Sullivan had a lot of input. But I give Jim Rutherford a lot of credit. It's not easy to... It's not easy to be the guy who says I was wrong and I have to change the way I was doing things. So there's that. This is the most surprising of the Penguins. The most enjoyable, I think, is always going to be the 91 one because we'd never seen it before. And, you know, I don't think you were born. Were you born in 91?
Yeah, I was born in 87, so I'm 29.
Okay, so 87. So you're a little younger to remember it. I was a teenager. We didn't, none of us, whether we were watching it, covering it, I talked to guys who covered it, even the guys playing for it, so many of those guys hadn't won before. They didn't know what was going on. I mean, it was just like this, it was like this two-month prom where it was just kind of, everybody was just caught up in the moment. I think that's the most enjoyable. To me, the 92 team is the best Penguin team ever. It's not close. They won 11 straight games in the postseason. That's almost impossible to conceive of. They swept the team in the final that the previous year had been the President's Trophy team. They knocked out in the first rounds the two teams that had the best records in hockey that year. They didn't have home ice in either of those two rounds. They overcame 3-1 and 2-1 deficits, and this 2-1 deficit that they overcame without Mario Lemieux. And the 2009 one will end up being the one maybe that gets lost a little bit, but that might have been the one that showed the Penguins to be really special in a way, because that was the second straight team that went to the final, and it's hard to get back there and beat the team that you lost to. It just doesn't happen a lot, and you know they'll probably deserve a more memorable place in history than they'll get. But this run had so many big moments, and I think because so many of the victories came, the series were closed out at Consol and everything, from the gold outs to the Murray story to the Kessel story. I mean, all of it I think will probably go down as the most surprising victory the Penguins have ever had.
Well, that's fair, and we all know the story and how the Penguins got to this point, and no one would have expected it with how dark it got at times and the clouds that were there, but all the drama that was involved. Out of everything, Rob, when you're looking at bringing in Kessel in the offseason, when you're looking at having to make additions of Hagelin and Trevor Daley, who played integral roles through this team season into the playoffs, eventually winning the Stanley Cup, and even the hiring of Mike Sullivan, which not everybody was immediately elated with, and firing Mike Johnston, out of all of those, because they all played a part, without any of those, it probably wouldn't have happened the way it did. But out of all of those, which one would you say – or even some other one, which one would you say was the most impactful leading to this fourth Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh Penguin franchise history?
Well, Sullivan's hiring was significant because he held everybody accountable. And if he hadn't been able to hold everybody accountable, I'm not sure that the two most underappreciated aspects of this run would have happened, which were when Evgeny Malkin comes back, getting him to buy in right away that, hey, you know, Kessel's not – you're not getting your wingers back, and you're going to have reduced minutes. If Evgeny Malkin feel a sense of loyalty to the organization and to the guys in that room and doesn't feel like he has to hold himself accountable in that way, that doesn't happen. And two, Marc-Andre Fleury – and I know I'm a Fleury fan – but Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't get the credit he deserves for not submarining this whole thing, because he was concussed. And he lost his job to injury, and by the time the Eastern Conference Final rolled around, you could no longer say that the other guy was performing so well that it wouldn't have been justified to turn over the rest of the postseason to Fleury in Game 1. And he was down for a couple of days, but then he became a good teammate. I think the fact that you had Malkin and Fleury putting the team over their individual needs, I think it makes it a lot easier to hold everybody accountable when those guys are allowing themselves to be sort of used in a way that they never foresaw. Mike Johnston wouldn't have been able to do that. I don't know if Dan Bylsma or Mike Therrien would have been able to do that. I know Mike Sullivan did, and, you know, when Evgeny Malkin told me during the final it was his privilege to play for Mike Sullivan, that wasn't a word he chose by accident. I think he really buys into what Mike Sullivan wanted. I think he understood at this point in his career, I think Geno's always understood this, but I think he really understood that, you know, I think the Penguins' best players understood they have a chance to win a championship, and it had been so long that they had won a championship that, you know, they had to take advantage of this. So I think Mike Sullivan's hiring, you can't put too much of a check mark beside it, too big of one. And now Bill Guerin and I talked about something in the days before they won. You know, it was my theory that, in a way, Crosby and Malkin and Letang and Fleury, maybe more so Crosby, Malkin, and Letang, they had to have what happened play out, I think, for them to appreciate the opportunity that was presented to them again. And by that, I mean, if it hadn't been a, you know, last year was such a bad year for the Penguins. I'm talking 2014, 2015. They were never really competitive against the Rangers. It looked like their window had passed. Then they start this season the way they do, and it's going miserably. And it looks like they're done, right? I mean, like, let's be honest. It, going into December, it looks like, you know, the Crosby-Malkin era is gonna end in a bad way. They're going to only get one together, and this thing is going to blow up. I think if it hadn't gotten that bad, they may not have been able to seize the moment when it was there, because I think you have to – they've known a lot of good. And the negative around Pittsburgh for so long had been that the good wasn't good enough. But it was.
And I just think when you look at this, we'll remember this as one of the most memorable and surprising runs in the history of the franchise of any Pittsburgh team, really. And I think we'll probably also look back at it as one of the more enjoyable ones. I don't think you'll ever have more pure joy than when they won their first championship. And I think, unfortunately, this will make the 09 team get forgotten about in one way. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate. But you know what? They won, not forgotten about, but it won't be the one that everybody talks about. And that's unfortunate. Right. But you know what? At the same time, they have a pretty good legacy, because, like I said, that's the first one they won with Sid and Gino too. So
I also don't think they care. The ring's gonna look fine.
Yeah. this ring's going to look really fine. That other one still looks pretty good.
And pay no tab.
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
You also were talking about the most impactful move that was made, either an addition of the players, of Hagelin, Trevor Daley, Mike Sullivan becoming the head coach, and then even Phil Kessel in the offseason. Because Phil Kessel meant a lot to this team, maybe not during the regular season, a little bit disappointing for him, but in the playoffs, he was a Conn Smythe candidate. Without him, I don't know if they win the Stanley Cup. Which one of those was the most impactful, maybe?
You can't, in terms of player acquisitions, the Phil Kessel trade is the one that I think meant the most for this season, even though it happened in the offseason. And it's also the one that might be the one that, you know, is most troublesome going forward, just because how will that contract look, right? We just don't know. But I will say this. In the end, who cares? Because they won a Stanley Cup, and that, you know, that changes a lot of things. So I think when you look at the Penguins and you look at the moves that were made, to me, the thing that is most impressive, again, is the way they changed the course. Jim Rutherford went from building a team that was big and tougher to a team that was younger and smaller but faster, and a team that defended in a way that nobody really defends in this league. And it'll be interesting to see how much of that team's copy. And it'll also be interesting to see going into next season how much the Penguins can take with their approach in the postseason, which was blocking a lot of shots and playing with that pace. I don't know that you can do that for 82 games. And Mike Sullivan is already going to have a short summer, I think that's going to be an interesting thing to see how it plays out next year. But look, there's a long time to get to that. So we don't have to think about it right now.
Speaking with Rob Rossi here on the Penguins Airwaves, the Pittsburgh Sports Mission Airwaves, Radio PI Podcast Network, talking all things aftermath of the Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup win, and maybe getting to some Pittsburgh Power Talk a little bit later. As we move through this year, Rob, this is the elephant in the room. I mean, they won the Stanley Cup. You're going to have jubilation. Obviously, that was good. a lot of these dramas and the negativity and the roller coaster ride, all that's being put to bed because of the Stanley Cup. But there is the carrot left out there, and is the part of the offseason that isn't necessarily going to be fun, but they're going to have to do, and that is what you alluded to earlier with Marc-Andre Fleury. Great Penguin for so many years, was a starting goaltender on a Cup team, back up this year on the playoff run, but without him in the regular season, they don't even get there. I'm with you there. He was getting actually better in his career individually. Then the team wasn't enough around him, but then they were injured. And it's been a very bizarre, polarizing career with Marc-Andre Fleury in Pittsburgh. I would imagine with his age, he would still want to play. He would still want to play at a high level. He's going to have some value. They're going with Murray. All signs point to going with Murray, the young guy. Fleury does have the cap hit. It's a short offseason. Some teams have shown interest. I heard rumors of Calgary and other teams. What do you know about the Marc-Andre Fleury talks? Is it 100% that he is gone? Does he want to leave to become a starter somewhere else, or would he be okay with being a 1B, maybe a backup to Matt Murray for a year or two here? What, any inside information you have and the realism and logic of Marc-Andre Fleury in that offseason?
All I can tell you is I don't think he's reached the final decision yet. I think there are going to be discussions with the hockey club this week about where this is going. And, you know, I think Marc-Andre Fleury's preference would be to return to the Penguins as their number one goalie. Not with an opportunity to win the job, but to be the number one goalie. You know, his position would be, I think that, you know, he didn't lose this job because of performance. He lost it because of injury. And that's going to be really tough to do because the other guy won the Stanley Cup. Best thing for the Penguins would be to have, quite candidly, both of them back. And I think the best case scenario for the Penguins is probably to bring Mark back, have them, I don't say split time. Maybe you give Matt Murray 35 games. Maybe you give Mark the rest if they're both healthy. And then you get to the point where it's, you know, if you're fortunate enough, one of those guys establishes himself going into the playoffs, and then maybe you lose Mark next year in the expansion draft, but you get another Stanley Cup out of it. I think the most likely scenario is Mark and the Penguins realize this isn't a match that's going to work anymore, and that this becomes a situation where, you know, the Penguins have to make a trade of a guy that is really one of the backbone guys of their franchise and one of the most popular guys in the franchise. And it's a trade that I don't know that you can win because you're not going to get a whole lot back other than possibly cap space, which is a big win, but it's tough to sell sell fans on cap space. We're still not, you know, people still aren't conditioned to think of that cap space is what it is. But to the Penguins, it's very valuable. But I don't think you're going to get a great player in return. I don't think you're going to get a great pick in return for Marc-Andre. I think it's foolish to think that you will. I've heard people speculate, oh, they'll get a first or second round pick. But there's no way. There's just no way that's happening. And to me, this is a thing where he gets to control somewhat where he goes. And how many teams can add a $6 million goalie? Or a $5.7 million goalie. I mean, just aren't had that in cap space that need it and that are going to have a chance to win. I mean, to me, the one, you know, people talk about Calgary, and I have no doubt that Calgary's interested. Calgary might be a Marc-Andre Fleury away from being, you know, not only a playoff team, but a team that could make a run in the playoffs. But to me, the real team I would be looking at, and I don't know if they're interested, but they should be, is the Dallas Stars, because I think that's the type of team that could quite quickly become a Stanley Cup champion with a goalie that knows how to play and handle the type of high pressure moments that Marc-Andre Fleury knows how to play. And they play a style similar to what he's played with the Penguins in the past. So to me, that's the team. If I'm the Penguins, and if I'm Mark, I'm looking at that because it's a great school system in Dallas and it's a good place to raise a family. And, you know, you could go there and be a real significant part of an organization that has had a lot of success but is looking to get back over that final hump. You know, I think that to me would be intriguing if I'm Mark. But I don't know if we're at that point yet. I do think we're coming to the point where we're going to see the Penguins have the conversation with Mark.
Now I understand how it is a short off season, how the value is there, but the difficulty in making this trade. But could you said fans don't understand this, how you're not going to get a first round draft pick, how this is difficult. I get it. Could you explain to either the casual fan or the layman who's never covered this game, and maybe not even an intelligent fan, why that is? Why this is not going to just be fantasy hockey and you're not going to get a first-round pick? Why this is difficult to move Marc-Andre Fleury right now?
Well, first of all, Marc-Andre Fleury is a 32-year-old goaltender, and though that still is the prime for a goalie, and a lot of great goalies have won a lot after that, it's just harder to move players in their 30s. But more importantly, a goalie is probably the one player you can move in your 30s and get a lot of returns for, except that almost every team has a pretty good goalie now. The difference is, does every team have a great goalie? No. But does every team have the opportunity to bring in a goalie that has $0.7 million cap hit? It's a really good cap hit for Marc-Andre Fleury to a team that's going to play Marc-Andre Fleury the way he should be played, which is about 60 to 65 games. But if you're going to have him play 40, that's not a good cap hit. So now you need a team that needs a number one goalie that's in a market that he – that is in one of 12 markets where he would like to go. So, I mean, there are just restrictions that are built into this. I think the one thing that Mark will have to sort of be willing to do is maybe go someplace that he might not have considered otherwise if he wants to pick a place where he's going to win. If he wants to pick a place where he's gonna be the guy, maybe that team isn't as close to winning. I mean, I think it all comes – there's a lot of factors that go into this. But, I mean, because of the limited trade clause that he has, because of the cap hit, because of the fact that so many teams have some pretty good goalies but maybe not great ones, but maybe they don't think you need a great one. I mean, look, the Penguins just won a Stanley Cup with a prospect. I mean, he's a top prospect, but he's a prospect. I don't think anybody looks at the goaltenders that Chicago has won with and says, you know what, those are all-time goalies. You know, the Bruins went to a cup final with one goalie and won it with another. And, I mean, a goalie can get hot. I mean, look at San Jose. Martin Jones, quite frankly, I mean, nobody was talking about him as a great goalie until the Stanley Cup final. Yeah, anytime you're trying to move a guy with this type of cap hit and this type of status, you would think it would be a big trade. I think also you got to understand the Penguins might not be looking for a lot in return here. They might be looking just for that cap space. That cap space might be so valuable to them because they haven't had it, and they have a little bit now, but not a ton. That cap space might be all they really – maybe not all they want from Marc-Andre Fleury, but what they're most realistic about attaining. They're still going to have to go out and get a backup goalie if they do it, because I don't see any indication right now to think that Matt Murray is necessarily ready to be the everyday goalie for the Penguins the way that Marc-Andre Fleury was, just because, you know, he hasn't done that at this level, and that's hard to do at this level, and we did see some holes in his game. So I think this will be fascinating, but to me, you can't bring Mark back if Mark isn't comfortable with Matt Murray, you know, at least being the co-franchise goalie. And if Mark's not comfortable with that, I think you have to not bring him back, because I don't see how you can interject that to the locker room, because Matt Murray's the type of guy where he doesn't strike me as a guy who wins a lot of favor with teammates for anything other than his play, because he doesn't own a lot of his bad goals. And you contrast that with Fleury's style, which is much different than that. It's a tricky situation. I don't think you want to build any resentment into your team. And the Penguins, I'm not saying they definitely would do that, but it would be a tough situation.
You don't see every day either a team win a Stanley Cup with, not to say a controversy, but a quarterback goalie controversy of sorts that the Pittsburgh Penguins had. All through the playoffs, it was this conversation, and eventually they ended up winning a Stanley Cup with how dominant of a team they are. And I'm right with you. I've been hitting the nail on the head on this for a while. The way I would build a team in today's NHL, and even for the past 5, 6, 7, maybe 10 years, you have a stacked team around them. offense, defense, everything. And then you just need a goaltender who's good enough. That's why even some of the flurry hate of the past might not have been as prevalent and as necessary, because if you're giving a goaltender, you're getting a goaltender who's good enough for you and just not killing you, then, hey, you can win a championship. You don't necessarily, all these teams need Henrik Lundqvist or need Dominik Hasek. That's not necessarily the recipe anymore. You can have a Corey Crawford. Jonathan Quick wasn't even that good the last cup the Kings won. As long as you're good enough, you can win a cup as long as the team is good enough. Now, what would you say to people, Rob, that are in the camp, and now it is not a loud camp, it is a minority camp, but there are some people in that camp in which they're saying Matt Murray won you a Stanley Cup, he is 22 years old, but Marc-Andre Fleury's been the franchise guy before, he's also won you a cup, he was getting better, and many believe they could have won the cup anyway. Cam Ward has had an average career, but not a great career. Patrick Waugh obviously became a legend, but there's been a lot of goaltenders that win a Stanley Cup at a young age and then fade, and they don't give you enough to win later on. What do you say to the camp that say they actually want, if they have to part with one of the two, they actually would rather keep Fleury and part with Matt Murray? What would you say to them?
Well, look, I think if you were really looking at this from a hockey perspective, and I saw John Steigerwald's column on this, I thought it was interesting. I mean, yeah, I think you could make a real strong argument that Matt Murray is the guy to trade. His value's highest, but he's also got the most value as a cap guy, and he's won a Stanley Cup. Let's not short credit him for that. The upside for Matt Murray is better, but what is the Penguins' realistic window here? You know, I think their window's probably, you know, conservatively 2 to 3 years to keep this going with this group. I mean, look, I mean, Crosby and Malkin and Letang have now had 3 Stanley Cup runs under their belt. You just think about that. They've played 24, 48, and 68 games in 3 of the last 8 postseasons. They've gone to the conference final once during that span. I mean, they've played a lot of extra hockey. A lot of people will tell you that the average Stanley Cup playoff game is equivalent to playing about 3 regular season games. So how much greatness is left in this core group? How will Phil Kessel age? Who's the better goalie for the next 2 years? I mean, I don't know how to answer that question, because a lot of people think it's Matt Murray. I don't know that you can say that. I don't think you can say that. I don't think you can have that answer conclusively. I don't think you can look at what Matt Murray's done and say, yeah, he's definitely the better goalie next 2 years. But, again, we don't live in that world where it's just a straight-up hockey. Matt Murray, if you move him, might get you better pieces, but how are you going to put those pieces under the salary cap? I mean, I just think that that's the trouble here. And that's why I think one of the other things the Penguins really have to do this offseason is name Jason Bottrell as the general manager in waiting. I mean, if Mike Yeo can be the general, or can be the coach in waiting for the St. Louis Blues, I don't know why the Penguins can't name Jason Bottrell the GM in waiting, because ultimately the Marc-Andre Fleury trade has to be made by the guy who's going to be the general manager when Jim Rutherford isn't. Because that's when that trade's going to be felt, the impact of that trade. Because Matt Murray, if you're committing to him, ends up being the guy that you see getting you. He becomes the bridge to the next era of the post-Crosby, Malkin, Letang era. And by that, I mean the era when they're no longer the best players on the team. You know, you're basically saying at some point that's going to be Matt Murray. And we're going to be winning with one of those goaltenders. Because let's face it. If Matt Murray is what everybody thinks he is, in 2 years, he'll be paid like Henrik Lundqvist. I mean, he'll be paid big, big money because he won't get a bridge contract, most likely. He'll get an 8-year deal from the Penguins. They'll probably be playing him over the $6, $7 million range, because if he's that guy, so his cap relief is going to be for a limited window. But right now, because you have Crosby and Malkin in this situation, I think there's a lot of factors that go into this, but I don't think those people are wrong looking at it. But again, I urge Penguin fans, you have to look at this as a salary cap situation as much as anything. And knowing that the Penguins' hands are kind of tied here, because you don't want to lose Mark. If the Penguins, I think, were real comfortable in that they would definitely be able to protect Matt Murray over Marc-Andre Fleury in that expansion draft, this becomes a different thing. But I'm not sure anybody feels that they know that yet. So they would, if it gets to the expansion draft, what if they have to protect Marc-Andre Fleury because of his contract? Because his contract stipulates that, you know, he can pick 12 teams, and he'll say, well, you can't do that. Then you have to expose Matt Murray if you're only going to be able to protect one goalie. So there's a lot going into this factor for the Penguins, and, you know, it's not just Fleury's feelings.
That's really interesting because everybody's talking with the mentality of you might as well just trade Marc-Andre Fleury because you're not going to be able to protect him, and then you'll lose it for nothing. You might as well get some value or cap relief, but nobody's really figuring that maybe they have to actually protect him because of the fact that he does have the ability to block certain teams. And there also has to be the understanding that even if you know you're going to be trading Marc-Andre Fleury and you're moving on from him this offseason, Marc-Andre Fleury's not going to necessarily want to screw himself over in his early 30s. He's going to want to go to a situation that either he'll be able to play or he'll be able to win. So they can't just trade him off to anybody because it's the best deal. It's a difficult offseason despite winning a Stanley Cup.
Well, it's always the most difficult offseason you'll ever have is when you win the Stanley Cup, except for when you lose the Stanley Cup, because these front offices are working through the Stanley Cup final, and they're working through the Stanley Cup final, but more importantly, they are, and this is the key to keep in mind, they've got a limited window to make deals. I mean, big trades don't normally happen during the season. They normally happen in the offseason. They normally happen right around the draft or July 1st. So this is a big couple of weeks for the Penguins, at least regards to Marc-Andre Fleury, to see where they're going to go with things.
And hockey has a ridiculously short offseason in terms of all the major sports, and NBA, I guess, is right with them. But it's an even a little bit longer, though, because they start later in the fall. This is a really short offseason the Penguins have, especially when you go as far as you do Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final. And they're happier to be lifting the Stanley Cup after they position to say San Jose, who does not have a championship to show for it, maybe has decisions of their own and having to work so long into the playoffs as well. Talking with Rob Rossi here from Radio Gold and the Penn Initiative Airways, the Pittsburgh Sports Initiative Airways, and the Radio PI Podcast Network. Rob, now, you alluded to this, and it's like we were in sync and we have the chemistry going, because that was kind of the final piece I wanted to hit on before I brought the Pirates up and then we closed this chapter. Now, Jim Rutherford came over as a long-tenured general manager with the Carolina Hurricanes, led him to two cup finals, did win them a Stanley Cup, surprisingly, for a smaller market, has now led the Penguins to a Stanley Cup. He's had his share of criticism during his tenure with Pittsburgh, absolutely, but it was always thought to be a tenure, and even the way he spoke in his opening press conference, that wasn't going to be forever. He said it was his last job, but it was relatively known as a bridge until the next general manager, who's younger, is going to take over, figuring that guy would be in-house, but nobody knows for sure. Do you feel 100% certainty that guy has already been known, is known right now? Is there a situation that, based on the Stanley Cup having been won by Jim Rutherford, that ball could be in motion sooner and Jim Rutherford might not hang around as long because he kind of got his accomplishment finished by winning that Stanley Cup? And is that a situation that needs to be resolved soon in terms of naming the general manager in waiting, especially now that hockey, much like college football for so many years, has now moved into naming coaches in waiting and other management positions in waiting that they didn't used to do as often?
Well, I just think if one of these guys, I'm assuming it would be Jason Bottrell, but let's say it's Bill Guerin, if one of them is the GM in waiting, I think it's fair to them at this point, 2 years into this, to name them that guy and then, you know, let the other guy maybe pursue other opportunities that will get him closer to a championship or to a job.
A job and then a championship.
So, I mean, look, Jim Rutherford, I think he's going to stay this year, but, I mean, he even left the door open a little bit in his postseason presser. I just think that, you know, at some point it would make sense if the guy's on the staff to name the guy. And
is maybe the
you know,
guy not
I think
or maybe they're not sure? Is that part
well,
of
Well, I don't know. I mean, because
happening?
Look, I don't know where the sale stands. And I go back to this. Until Mario Lemieux or Ron Burkle come out and say that they are not the team is not for sale. I'm not allowing myself to go there because I believe that what they wrote in the press conference was pretty, what they wrote in the press release, I should say, was pretty obvious, which was that, you know, we will comment on this when the process is over, and they haven't commented. So, I think there's a lot that could be playing here. I mean, maybe Jim Rutherford could at some point take a different role in the organization. Maybe he becomes a president if a new owner decides, maybe they're upper management, maybe David Morehouse leaves. He's got ties to the Clinton operation. You know, that's an operation that looks like it's going to the White House. There's a lot of, somebody like him with his talents in the political world could certainly do something there. I mean, I think there's a lot of things in the air, but I mean, to me, if Jason Bottrell or Bill Guerin aren't going to be the general manager in Pittsburgh, then you need to let them know that, because that's proceeding a very different way than you would be proceeding if they are, one of them are. And if one of them are, that deserves to be made clear. So I think that's the situation where you're going.
Mm-hmm. It did seem that this was a bridge general manager, that yes, they won a Stanley Cup,
yes,
but one of these guys in-house is going to be the next general manager for the future of the Pittsburgh Penguins, no matter who's on this roster. Now, we don't know anything for sure until we get an announcement, and there's a lot of...
Yeah, I get the sense that this will be Jim's last year. Yeah, I get the sense this is Jim's last year, and I get the sense that...
if there was no Stanley Cup, do you think he'd hang around longer? Or is he now comfortable because his legacy is entrenched? He might even be a Hall of Famer now in hockey.
Yeah, he might be. I mean, this certainly is a legacy-making championship for him. I mean, I think, Jim's eventually going to want to go back to Carolina and live in that nice house he has there on that golf course. I mean, that's where his family was raised, his young family. I could see Jim wanting to take a shot at repeating, and if it repeats, you walk away with two, and if not, well, hey, you got the one. And then that completes the 3 years. I just think, I think a lot of signs point to the fact that it is going to be a Jason Bottrell run organization later. And maybe if it is, and he knows that, and everybody knows that, you don't ever need to announce it. But I think it'd be kind of neat if they did announce it, just so that we all knew. My guess is Jim will be the GM going into next season, and that after next season it'll be Jason Bottrell. Because if it's not, then how many times can Jason Bottrell not get a real look at from another team? Because, I mean, quite frankly, there are franchises that could be better with Jason Bottrell running them than they could anybody else right now. And, the Penguins may end up being one of those franchises down the road, but I think they need to make themselves – the Penguins need to position themselves right now, to me, to keep either Guerin or Bottrell. Because you can't lose both of those guys and then have Jim Rutherford walk away. You've already lost Tom Fitzgerald, who I think will be a general manager in this league and think will be a pretty good one. So
it does appear it's one of the two of them. It does appear it'd be nice to have that announced. But a lot going on in the Pittsburgh Penguins offseason. But hey, there's not much to be upset about because it is an offseason stepping off a Stanley Cup championship. And a lot of those legacies, including even the general manager, Jim Rutherford, have now kind of been entrenched because that Stanley Cup has been won. It would be a lot different if that Stanley Cup had not been won. Rob, I'm going to just ask you one thing on the Pirates. Before we do, Penguins got the fourth cup. The legacies are there. Any last words you want to give us on this roller, this asinine roller coaster of a year that eventually becomes the Stanley Cup? That's how I kind of phrased it. Any last words from you for the Pens Initiative fans and even all Pittsburgh Penguin fans?
Well,
on
I was
this
wrong
year
on
of Penguin Hawk.
Yeah, I was wrong on some things and right on more than people want to give me credit for. When I said that team wasn't going to make the playoffs, I want to point out that team was fourth in the wild card chase and wasn't going to make the playoffs. That team wasn't coached by Mike Sullivan. That team didn't have Carl Hagelin and Trevor Daley. That team didn't have this version of Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang playing like it did. So, but I'm actually, I'm really happy for Penguin fans. I think they had suffered enough. I sense that they were able to enjoy this. I've always only wanted the best for the Penguins. I like a lot of guys on that team. I'm very happy for Sidney Crosby. I think his career can now be viewed the way it should, which is one of the best players of all time. I'm very happy for Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang. Thrilled for Phil Kessel because, I mean, he just seemed to be a guy that really was misidentified in Toronto. And, you know, it was fun to see young kids. And I hope people enjoyed this. My message to Penguin fans is that enjoy it when it happens because you don't know when it's going to happen again. And maybe the lesson from 09 is not to keep waiting for the next one, just to let this one savor. Secondly, my message to all Pittsburgh fans is before you write the Pirates off, remember where the Penguins were in December.
This is a lesson, yes. This is a lesson because nobody, anyone who thought the Penguins were going to do this in December or January is a complete liar. This is a lesson that you never know. It's a long, long season. Before we go, Pittsburgh Pirates, of course, fit 15 back of the Chicago Cubs. They're in third right now. The Cubs are in first. You got the Cardinals to deal with. That's where we stand as we speak on June 20th. This could obviously be fluid, but the Pirates are well back of at least the division. We're dealing with some great teams in the National League. The season hasn't gone exactly the way they thought it was going to. Several years in a row at the playoffs, but they do want more. What do you feel is the state of the Pittsburgh Pirate address as we stand June 20th? First day of summer, first official day of summer for the boys of summer. The Penguins have won the Cup. The Steelers still have an offseason, but then a regular season play. The Pirates are front and center now, even for the region.
Yeah.
The Pirates are front and center now. How will they deal with it? What is the state of the Pirates Union address as the first official day of summer kicks
and the Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup dust has settled? It's tough to envision them winning the division because 15 games is a lot to make up against a team like the Cubs, who they can't beat. And they're dealing with some injuries that might be impossible for overcome. I will say this. It will be tempting for a lot of people to write the Pirates window as slamming shut. I don't think that's the case. And without getting too much into this, it's going to be a conversation for another day on another show. I will say this. Sometimes a team like the Pirates that's trying to win for the first time has to have a step backwards before it can have the big step forward. And there have to be things that give you the opportunity to do things. You know, the Penguins don't draft Jaromir Jagr if they don't miss the playoffs in 1990. The Penguins don't win the Stanley Cup this year if they haven't, really fallen to the depth that they had that allowed Mike Sullivan to be able to reach them the way he did when he came in. The Steelers don't win the Super Bowls they've won recently if they don't, have a 6-10 season and get Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, and you look at the Pirates, they have a really good core. And maybe this is the year where they don't make the playoffs, but they end up being able to bring up some of these young pitchers, Taillon and Glasnow, maybe even a young position player like Bell. And maybe they get them some necessary reps so that they can take a big step next year. And maybe missing the playoffs this year, coming with what a new CBA, will give them some clarity on the issue going forward with Andrew McCutchen, because maybe by this time in the fall, maybe by the fall, both sides will know what's really realistic between McCutchen and the Pirates. And then maybe you can make a baseball trade, if he's not going to be here, that can help get you that piece that gets you over the hump. So sometimes the step back is the hardest thing for fans to swallow, but the most necessary thing if fans really want to see a championship. So I wouldn't rule out the Pirates winning a championship just yet. I just think sometimes you have to take a step backwards, and maybe this is what they're doing this year. Maybe it'll be for the better.
It's always a maturation process. You can point to every championship won by any team in any sport. There was a process to get there. There was something that negatively had to happen to eventually lead to the positive. You're absolutely right, and you got that on the money. Rob Rossi, thanks for joining me. We will definitely talk again, and if not on these airwaves, I got some things in the work for me personally on some future airwaves that I hope to have you on.
Cool.
As well. So I'll always appreciate the conversation, and I owe you a beer somewhere in Pittsburgh too.
Appreciate it, man. Take care. Keep me posted.
Absolutely. Rob Rossi coming at you, WPXI, CBS Radio, 93.7 The Fan, Trib Total Media, Tribune Review. He's even on Trib Live Radio. He's all over the place. Pittsburgh media extraordinaire, to say the least. That was Rob Rossi fitting the sports talk fire and giving us more radio gold. And many of you don't want to hear it when he's keeping it real with you, because he has to keep it real, like anybody in media should do. You're not always going to get what you like. You're not always going to be happy with what he or anybody else tells you, what I may tell you. People are going to, or should, keep it real, be logical. Fans might not always be logical, but the media should be logical, be realistic, keep it real, tell you how it is. That's what I want as a fan. I want the media to tell me how it is. Don't talk down to me. Don't tell me something that's unrealistic or obviously is not going to occur. Tell me how it is. That's how I hope you all would want and how anybody should at least want from their media. So I got to give him his due. He's always been kind. He's always been generous to me. I know many of you think he's a heel. He embraces being a heel, which is the first step of being a good, strong heel. But you got to tell it like it is. Nobody in December thought that Pittsburgh Penguins were going to be winning the 4 Stanley Cups. People were hating on the Kessel trade because he was underachieving on a new team. People were down on Crosby's legacy. People were down on Malkin's legacy. The civil war between the fan base of the two of them was at its maximum. Of course, Letang, some were calling him overrated. He ended up having a borderline Norris Trophy type of season even before the playoffs. No one even knew who Matt Murray really was in the most of the fan base. He eventually became the goaltender to lead him to a cup. People were still hating on Marc-Andre Fleury, even though he got a lot better. And without his regular season success, they wouldn't have been the opportunity they were in. Nobody expected anything from Bonino's and Lovejoy's, and they were criticizing that move and some of those role players, Hagelin and Trevor Daley coming over. Those are great additions now, but I don't think anybody thought when he brought him over they were all of a sudden going to be integral parts of a Stanley Cup run. Not everybody wanted Mike Sullivan when he first got the job. There were some even who thought Mike Johnson being fired at that point was a bit unfair to him because it was only a year and a quarter into the gig. Mike Sullivan, maybe not even the guy you should bring in. All of those dramas, Jim Rutherford got some of the most crap. People didn't want him. All of those dramas, all of that, all put to bed by Jim Rutherford showing that the moves he made were necessary and they were the right moves. Mike Sullivan becoming the right guy, not only adding those pieces and retooling the roster, but administering a culture to this team, helping the team mentally get over the hurdle, and putting the system in place they needed to have in place for the roster they had. Crosby and Malkin got rejuvenated, even though they had roller coaster rides. Maybe Malkin wasn't fully healthy, but they did it when they had to. They cemented their legacies. Matt Murray stood in his head, played good enough for you with a good enough team around him, maybe not stellar all the way through or an elite goaltender. We don't know about the future, but was good enough as a goaltender on a championship team with how good the team was around him. Chris Letang stepped up and became one of the better players, MVP-type players on this team. Phil Kessel did what he did sparingly whenever Toronto was in the playoffs, did in the Olympics, steps up in the big moments, is a clutch player, is one of the best players in the world, and is a prolific goal scorer, and was a great addition, becoming that third head, 2-3 head monster, bringing him in the offseason. Showed all of you that in the playoffs with a Conn Smythe worthy campaign despite Crosby winning the award. So all of that went on, and maybe someday all the championships the city has seen, 11 titles since 1964 when Cleveland won its last professional sports major championship prior to the 2016 Cavaliers and LeBron James bringing them that championship to break the drought. 11 championships for Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in pro sports, and that's out of three franchises, the Pittsburgh Pirates from the 70s, Pittsburgh Steelers from the 70s and 2000s, Pittsburgh Penguins early 90s, and then these 2000s runs. 11 championships. Phenomenal. Appreciate it. Realize that your 7 years of plight, your 7 years of hardship, your 7 years of misery waiting for the Penguins to do it again under Crosby. Yeah, that was some suffering, and it sucked for you. Maybe they underachieved during the entire tenure of him as a Pittsburgh Penguin as a team, but not even close to 52 years of many stars, Hall of Famers, legends, moments, mostly gut-wrenching, where they would get so close or all, not even be a contender at all, not even be good. But when they were good enough, they would get so close and have it ripped away from them. But as much as I'm a career Cleveland hater, Cleveland curse appreciator, they do deserve this now. They're a world champion. The Cleveland curse is over. Other cities are now on the hook. I saw some math, and now San Diego, but you only have a couple pro sports teams. Buffalo is one, but they also only have a couple pro sports teams. D.C. probably is the area, but they did win in the early 90s, even though it's been such a misery since then. That's not as far as 1964 was. There's some other cities on the hook, but I don't know if anything will scream the way 1964 did for the Perth City and for Cleveland, Ohio. There's the Chicago Cubs, who maybe could end that for themselves this year with the lead they have on the Central Division and the Pittsburgh Pirates and company. Maybe they could do this, but they haven't done it since 1908. Pete Rose said recently, they have the team, they're talented enough, they're good enough, but they're going to mess with them in the playoffs. Why should I think differently? That's what they've been doing since 1908. There's some other curses, too. So until those are snapped, there's still a lot of misery out there. But none of that misery compares to Cleveland from 1964. 1964 on. That's major sports teams. That's a major location. That's a major area of loyal and really good fans. And it wasn't just one team, like, say, the Cubs with all those other Chicago championships over that span. It was every team, the pro sports scene. Major championships, and don't bring any minor leagues or Calder Cups. The major sports championships have been at a zero count since 1964 until LeBron James and the 2016 Cavaliers. So any of these Pittsburgh miseries or any of the annoyances, not even close to what other fan bases have to deal with. I can't even really feel bad for you for about 7 years of having to wait for another Crosby Cup. You still got 2 and 3 finals. But 11 championships since Cleveland's last night in 64 before the 2016 Cavaliers. So a lot to be appreciating, a lot to relish, a lot to realize you've been grateful to have or should be grateful to have, and a lot gone on in the Pittsburgh sports world in 1964, 52 years, to make you think Pittsburgh is a city of champions type, even though there's been other cities and locations that have had more championships and certainly more dynasties. There's been definitely some in Pittsburgh. There's been championships here, and it could be much, much worse. So all the moaning, all the complaining, all the anger and civil wars and everything going on Twitter, every game by game, any Ben Roethlisberger interception, every goal that's allowed by a goaltender, every misplay, every error by the Pirates, and every game they lose, and every moment that maybe you feel gut-wrenching to you, it's not even close to what a Cleveland sports fan had to deal with. And again, Rob Rossi keeps it real. I'll tell you like it is. If it changes a month later, that's not meaning he lied or was wrong necessarily. That's just how it is then, and it could change later on. That's how all media can do it. So thanks again to Rob Rossi for bringing us the Radio Gold and continued Radio Gold that we're going to do here at Pennsylvania Airwaves and Radio PI Podcast Network for next season, as this will keep on chucking along. But thanks again to Rob Rossi for the Radio Gold of this broadcast. Go to PennsVinnership.com for the continued off-season coverage of the Pittsburgh Penguins, aftermath post-Stanley Cup, what will happen with Fleury, that trade, our analysis, the whole off-season, mightily short as well, going into the World Cup, going into the regular season for the Penguins to defend their Stanley Cup and try and do it back-to-back like in the early 90s. They were not able to do it the last Cup in 09 and go back and do it again. Find the entertainment, find the memes, find the analysis, all there at PennsInitiative.com. Also go to PittsburghSportsInitiative.com, which we're referring to as our cousin site, PennsInitiative.com, but has morphed into itself this past season. All that Penguin coverage, as well as Pittsburgh Pirate coverage that Rob Rossi and I talked about briefly. The rest of the regular season, the All-Star break, and then some. Will they make the playoffs? Will it be another wild card berth? Will they lose in the wild card round again? That annoying conversation that will keep revving up its engine. The future that nobody wants to discuss, but I'm glad Rob Rossi brought it up, and I've been bringing it up to anybody I talk to, with Andrew McCutchen right now playing on a bargain of $10 million per season. When that contract's up, he's going to have to, at minimum, with an MVP in playoff appearances, make $25 million per, if not more. And there's going to be superstars who make money before his is up. And if the Pirates don't want to pay that or can't pay that until they're strapped by paying it, right or wrong, they probably do need to trade him for value and for assets, because that will then hamper them if they leave him for nothing. And the odds of him staying as a Pirate forever, making under $25 million a year, certainly at this current number, is almost zero and impossible to assume will happen. I'm sure you guys will hate him when he leaves for more money. I won't. But it might be the realistic mentality, and that will be also covered in Pittsburgh Sports Initiative, as well as podcasts from us here at Radio PI, whether you're touching on the Penguins, Pirates, or Steelers. Steelers got a training camp, off-season, regular season, onward and upward for them. Another contending season, you'd figure, for the Steelers. Many polarizing topics for them as well, with Ben Roethlisberger and crew and Mike Tomlin. Also, Bucko Talk for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Penn's Anarchy giving you some love for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Get all that, PennsInitiative.com, PittsburghSportsInitiative.com. Go to those two websites. Find Rob Rossi, Trip Total Media, Tribune of You, the lead columnist there for all of Pittsburgh sports. WPXI, see him on the final word. And also hear him on Rossi Radio, CBS Sports, 93.7 The Fan here in Pittsburgh. So for everybody at PennsInitiative.com and PittsburghSportsInitiative.com, for my guest for this Radio Cold broadcast, the heel of all heels, the strong heel of Pittsburgh media, the Pittsburgh media extraordinaire, Rob Rossi, I am Mike Rossi, and it's not ever goodbye. It's only see ya later. Right here, Penn's Initiative Airwaves, Pittsburgh Sports Initiative Airwaves, and the Radio PI Podcast Network.
Don't think shit, think pink gators. My Detroit players, Tim's for my hooligans in Brooklyn.
That's
dead right, it's the head right, Biggie there, air night. Papa been fool since days of under rules. Never lose, never choose to. Bruise, cruise, who? Do something to us.
Come on.
Talk, go through us. Girls want to us, wanna do us. Screw us, who us? Yeah, Papa and Pump. Close like Starsky and Hutch, stick to clutch. Yeah, I squeeze three at your cherry M3. Bang every MC
take that.
Easily.
Take that.
Recently, niggas frontin' ain't saying nothing, so I just keep my peace.
Come
keep my peace. Cubans with the Jesus peace.
Thank
with
you,
my peace. Packing, asking who want it. You got it, nigga, flaunt it. That Brooklyn bullshit, we on it.
Sometimes your words just hypnotize me, and I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so mean. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me, and I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so mean.
I put O's in NY onto DKNY. Miami, D.C., prefer Versace.
That's right.
All Philly hoes know it's Moschino. Every cutie with the booty for the coochie. Now he's the real dookie. Meaning who's really the shit? Them niggas ride dick. Frank White push the stick called the Max. LX, 4.5. Bulletproof glass tips if I want some ass. Gon' blast, squeeze first. Ask questions last. That's how most of these so-called gangsters pass.
Bye-bye.
At last, a nigga rapping about blunts and bras, tits and bras, menage a trois, sex and expensive cars, and still leave you on the pavement. Condo paid for, no car payment, at my arraignment, no for the plaintiff. Your daughter's tied up in the Brooklyn basement, face it, not guilty. That's how I stay.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Earlier this week, Claire Tippins shared a princess nickname generator, 3 pictures of her dog wearing a tutu, and 2 online quizzes, including, what candy is your dream castle made of? Claire, your sharing has tipped the sugar scale and turned into oversharing. But have no fear, princess. Geico has something worth sharing with your internet kingdom, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance just by visiting geico.com. No magic wand required. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Earlier this week, Claire Tippins shared a princess nickname generator, 3 pictures of her dog wearing a tutu, and 2 online quizzes, including, what candy is your dream castle made of? Claire, your sharing has tipped the sugar scale and turned into oversharing. But have no fear, princess. Geico has something worth sharing with your internet kingdom, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance just by visiting geico.com. No magic wand required. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.